And so I think every character has an opportunity to succeed, an opportunity to fail, an opportunity to struggle, an opportunity to doubt themselves, because I think that's an important part about being a kid, right? What is childhood except a place to make mistakes?
That's J.D. Amato, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. J.D. Amato is a comedy writer and television producer. He joins us to talk about his debut middle grade graphic novel, The Endless Game. Set in Illinois, it's about a multi-generational unending game of capture the flag. J.D., welcome to Conversations.
I'm so excited to be here.
Well, this is your debut graphic novel for middle grade students. Tell us about what inspired you to write this book.
You know, it's two things. First is that I was a reluctant reader when I was the middle grade age. And back when I was a kid, this type of book didn't exist. There really wasn't a middle ground between, you know, comic books and prose books. And so I wanted to make a book that a kid like myself, who was just getting into reading and craving stories, but maybe a little intimidated by straight prose, could dive into and have something interesting with complex characters and nuance and adventure. And then also, you know, this is a story that's about a kid finding their identity upon moving to a new town and being sucked into a world of games, which was kind of my experience as a kid. I moved around a lot. And when I landed in the Chicago suburbs, it was sort of the first time I ever really had friends and found that sort of community. And I think that age and playing in the summer is a time when you learn about your identity. And so I wanted to write a book about that.
You're right. It can mean a lot to a kid to get involved with a sport or some other activity and through teamwork, gain friends, etc. But in the case of this book, the games are something quite different. So tell us about the plot. What's going on here?
Sure. So this book is about a kid who moves to a new town and comes to find that every kid in this town is part of a game of capture the flag that's been going on for 80 years and has been passed down from generation to generation and has divided the town in two. And so every kid sort of joins their side and finds their role within the game. And because it's been going on for 80 years, it's sort of taken over the entire focus of the town.
And why capture the flag?
You know, capture the flag is a game that I played a lot growing up. And I think it's sort of also one of the first games you play as a kid where you sort of that idea of division and team and a team goal, and it's something that you can't do on your own. It's sort of one of the first games where you experience all of those feelings.
Well, in this case, because this game has been going on for 80 years, it's multi-generational, it's become very involved. So tell us about the ways in which this goes far beyond what people might think of a normal capture the flag game.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, in this world, there is an entire sort of sub-universe that's sort of run by the kids that has everything from the Council of Homeschool Kids that oversees the rules of the game to saloons and jails and castles and bases and, you know, citywide bike races that determine different things in the game. And so it's really taken over everything. And as a kid, you escape into this game and it's its own society. It's its own, you know, world beneath the world of the adults.
And the adults endorse this because they went through it as kids themselves.
Yes, the adults have all played this game themselves and they've passed it down to their kids. And so, you know, as much as you'd like to think that maybe the adults sort of see the absurdity of this, they're actually as invested as the kids and maybe even a little bit more invested than the kids. But I will say, you know, having grown up, being a kid, what things haven't been passed down to us by the adults before us that it's sort of up to us to determine what's important and what's not important within.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about, sort of thematically, some of the things you were trying to say through this novel. And one of them is what kids inherit, whether it's a game or it's a worldview, et cetera. Tell us a little bit more about what you're trying to say here.
Yeah, you know, I think that age, you know, which is that middle grade age around 7 to 12, that's an important time in a kid's life where you're learning a lot about your sense of identity. And identity is something you explore for yourself, but it's also something that you're trying to learn in concert with what other people are telling you about who you are. And so some of that stuff is passed down to us. And so the way that we see the world or the way that we're told to see the world is often something that we have to learn whether we're going to accept or rebel against, or if it's something that we're going to sort of combine into our own worldview. And I think that's the first age when you start doing it. And Whether it's outside playing games in the summer or at home with your family and your parents or with your friends, that's an age where you're starting to figure that out. And so I wanted to, you know, tell a story where that experience is being put on display, because I think that's a really powerful time for kids.
And as you mentioned, you've got a new kid coming onto the scene, Fred. He is been kind of a loner because he moved around a lot. And he didn't really kind of want to attach to people because he's afraid he's going to move away and you know, that's just going to make him sad. But tell us more about him and sort of how he changes over the course of this book.
Yeah, you know, this was a book where one of my goals was, you know, Sophie and I, the illustrator together, one of our goals was to write a story where the main character wasn't necessarily the hero. And so one of the points of this book is that no matter what character you sort of see yourself in, you can sort of see their world and their story arc and their narrative independently. And everyone gets their moment to shine and their piece of the puzzle. And so with Fred, you know, he's a kid that's just like any other. There's not some magical special quality about Fred. He's a new kid in a new town. And in fact, different than the other kids, Fred doesn't know what he's good at or how he fits in because he's moved around so much. And so Fred's story is really a story about him trying to figure out where he fits into this at all. He's not the fastest bike rider, not the fastest runner. He doesn't know all the maps and all the this and that. He's trying to learn how to be a good friend, and that's the thing that he can offer to all of his teammates. So that was sort of one of the goals is, you know, this is a story where there's not a singular main character. I mean, there's a main character in Fred, but there's not a singular hero. There's not someone that saves the day, which I think is more reflective of real life.
And there's a king of his side of the struggle. And even this king, even though she comes off as very confident, et cetera, she has her moments of self-doubt as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the important things that I also wanted to depict is that, you know, no matter where you fit in, there's going to be moments of strength and moments of doubt and moments where you succeed and moments where you fail. And how we form our identity is not connected to those successes, right? It's not about just winning. It's about learning how to react to everything. And so I think every character has an opportunity to succeed, an opportunity to fail, an opportunity to struggle, an opportunity to doubt themselves, because I think that's an important part about being a kid, right? What is childhood except a place to make mistakes?
And for the people who are playing this game, especially the people in downhill, it's divided into uphill and downhill. They're trying to get justice for one of their players who was wrongfully accused of a crime. We won't go into too much detail here, but seeking justice is one of the themes I see in your story as well.
Yeah, and I would say for me, it's seeking justice in the face of other things that people say are more important or as important. And so, you know, we have a character, Rusty, who's having to sort of struggle with, what are the important things? Is it more important to be trying to figure out how to help your friend who's gone through a bad situation? Or is it more important to help your team figure out how to win this game? And so I think one of the things that we try to depict with that situation is that, you know, there's a game and there's winning, and then there's also other parts of life. And a lot of times as a kid, we're told that something is like the most important thing in the world. And it's only when you become an adult that you look back and you go, that was a little strange. I don't think that was as important as it needed to be. And you realize there's other parts of life that were maybe extremely important that were sitting right in front of you the whole time. So again, this is something we just want to sort of show all of the shades of childhood and the things that you sort of go through and the things that you have to reckon with.
And one of the things you point out is, you know, like there being life beyond the game. There's a scene where they go to, I think it's like a rocket camp or something like this, and he sees people outside of the game. And I can't remember if it was Rusty or if it was the king, one of the two, that said, you know, the rules don't apply here. Here we're just all kids, so you just set the game aside.
They go to a rocket camp, and it's in another town, so the rules of the game don't apply. And so kids from either side of the divided town are in this camp together, and they can all be friends and just be kids. And then they have this moment where they lose themselves in that, and they're having fun. And then something happens that pulls them back into the game, and they realize they have to go back to their sort of divided lives.
I think that says something about, I mean, for all of us, really, you know, we occupy certain roles in our life, whether it be work or certain relationships. But then we need to be adaptable and know that there are other times when we need to change and adapt to that situation and kind of become someone else.
Yeah. And, you know, part of adulthood even is about figuring out what of those identities are things that we decided for ourselves and what are things that have been handed down to us? And it's for us to decide what's important and what's not important.
So I think we touched on this in a number of ways, but besides just being an interesting read, what are some of the things that you hope kids are going to take away from this book?
You know, I want kids to be able to read this book and see themselves in it somewhere. I was a kid who, when I read stories growing up, I didn't see myself in the hero ever. I saw myself in the side characters in a lot of stories. That doesn't net out to much. You see yourself get lost in the margins as the hero saves the day. And so I want this to be a book where if you're a kid, you can read it and see yourself somewhere in it and see the struggles that you're going through at that age and the different aspects of identity that you're trying to figure out. I want it to feel like a book that is warm and comfortable and relatable and exciting, and that as a kid, you are just completely engrossed in. You might not know why, but it's because it reflects something that feels true to you about your experience.
JD, there's a question I like to ask authors of fiction, and it's this. If you could spend a day in real life with one of the characters from your book, who would it be and why?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, a character that I would spend the day with, I think, would be a character named Silent Sarah. So Silent Sarah is a character in the book that actually came about because my illustrator, Sophie Morse, and I actually had an extremely collaborative process where we worked together through every step of things. So I was pitching her story ideas. She was pitching me sort of sketches and blocking and things like that. And Silent Sarah was a character that my illustrator, Sophie, really took to and originally was a very small character in the book and then became larger and larger and became a, sort of this, a very wise character who sort of appears in a lot of important moments in the book. And I think she's a character that wasn't one that I sort of came into the book knowing exactly who she was going to be. And so I think if I had to spend a day with a character, it'd be Silent Sarah because I want to learn more about her because she was as much of a surprise to me as she would be if I got to meet her in person.
And she's a sort of master of disguise. So sometimes you don't know she's there and other times she kind of disappears. So it's kind of fun in the story that, wait, where did she go? Or where did you come from?
Yes. And she has an ability to not only sort of disappear into her surroundings, but then pop up and give some good advice from time to time. And I think that'd be a good friend to have. So I think I would choose Silent Sarah.
Yeah, I think Silent Sarah learns a lot just from observing and kind of taking in the bigger picture of what's happening.
Yeah, which is also, you know, that's a great example of a type of character that we wanted to make sure it was in there because that's also an experience of a lot of kids is there's kids who don't want to be the kid on a bike racing through the woods. They want to be the observer. They take things in. They sort of see what other people are dealing with and sort of pop in and sort of talk with them. So yeah, Silent Sarah is, I think, a really special character.
I want to talk just a moment more about that process between you and Sophie. Because there's kind of got this dance going on between the words and the images. What do you need to say versus what can you show? Tell us a little bit more about how that worked for the two of you.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we didn't realize that our process was unique until we started talking about our process. Because this is a double debut, a debut for both Sophie and myself. And so we went into it with no preconceived notions of how an author and illustrator are supposed to work together. And so I come from the television world, and so I'm used to collaborating with lots of people. And so it felt natural to include Sophie in the writing process and to get her feedback constantly throughout the story making. And then likewise, the work that Sophie had to do was so immense and was so full of story decisions and character choices in terms of how you depict things in illustration that I think it felt natural for her as well to sort of reach out to me to sort of talk things out. And again, I come from a TV world, and so I love talking about blocking and staging and how to, you know, move through a scene visually. And I think it ended up really helping the book in a way that if we had sort of stuck to our individual roles, we would have lost a lot of magic. Because when you write something, you're trying to tell the story through words. And when you're drawing the illustration, there's a whole different way to tell a story. And so there were times when there's something that I had written that Sophie said, I can tell that story with a couple panels and a look. And then there's times when Sophie was trying to struggle with something and I was going, well, we could just have this character say this, or we can sort of put the camera here and that'll tell the story. And I think it really helped us. And like I sort of mentioned, there were moments that came that were totally surprising. You know, if Sophie wasn't a part of the writing process, there's characters like Silent Sarah that Sophie saw herself in that suddenly became bigger characters and things. And likewise, there's scenes and actions and experiences that from my life that ended up in the illustration because, you know, throughout the process, Sophie was reaching out to me for reference and for ideas for things. And so both of us are really, our childhoods and our worlds are enmeshed in the book in a way that I think really adds to it.
Well, congratulations to both of you for having this book out there in the world now. Now that you've had this experience, do you see more graphic novels in your future?
Oh, I would love to. It's been such an amazing process. I mean, not only do I want to do just more graphic novels in general, but I think Sophie and I also feel like there's more stories to tell in this world. And so we're hoping that the book is a success and that we have the opportunity to tell more of the stories. Because as you know, the book does end in somewhat of a cliffhanger. There's some resolution, but there's also some things that haven't been figured out quite yet. So we'd be excited to dive in and tell more about this world.
Well, this graphic novel for middle grade readers is The Endless Game by J.D. Amato and illustrated by Sophie Morse. J.D., thank you for talking with me today.
This has been so lovely. Thank you for having me on the show. This is a blast.
Well, you'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen to the latest episodes on your phone or tablet, and you'll also find us on Facebook. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.